Welcome to Begin With Yes with Paul Boynton on Empower Radio, a show to help you create and embrace real personal change. You can overcome the challenges in front of you. You just begin with yes. Here's your host, Paul Boynton.
Hey, thank you, Brent. It's so good to be here. It's so wonderful to be part of the Empower Radio family, and we're grateful for your hospitality and grateful to all of our listeners, too, who are literally tuning in from all over the world to talk a little bit about positivity. Today, my guest is Kathy Boylan, who is the director of More Options for Seniors at the Moore Center. Kathy and I have a great time working together, and I'm so proud of all the work that Kathy does for the people our agency serves, and I know you're going to enjoy listening to what she has to say. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's going to be fun. You're right down the hall, actually. This is the first time I've talked to someone in the same building as I was, but we'll have a good time. And let's start, Kathy, with where you would probably expect, and that is for you to tell our listeners a little bit about the program that you run at the Moore Center, and then we'll take our conversation into some twists and turns that I think will be fun for everybody.
Okay, here I go.
All right.
We have a program here at the Moore Center that's specifically to help care for seniors in our community that are trying to remain living at home and in the community. And so my program is very cool because we get to kind of meet people where they're at, decide what's wrong and what kind of things they need help with, and then we put in the non-medical supports that help people stay at home and kind of keep them out of facilities, which is pretty important for a lot of reasons. People seem to do so much better when they can live at home and in familiar surroundings with their family around them. And we kind of pride ourselves in not overdoing, but doing just exactly what they need and not more than what they need. So that's one of our programs. Another one of our programs is a foster care model, which allows people that can't live alone in their own homes to still remain in the community, and they're cared for by a family, kind of a foster family. So it's a bit of a new concept, and we are one of the only agencies in New Hampshire that are currently doing that. So we're pretty excited about that.
And how widespread that is that in other parts of the country, Kathy?
Well, I think that there are, from what I hear from pretty much the bordering towns, Massachusetts and Vermont, people are doing it, but nobody's doing it really well that are close to us. So we feel like nursing home care is so expensive, and most of the time you're trying to fit, you know, a square peg into a round hole. Some people don't need all that care. They don't need more than maybe a few things, but there are no options for them. So they end up in a place where they're not actually, you know, it's not actually the best place for them. So we love that, having the opportunity to do, you know, some kind of creative things.
Kathy, can you talk a little bit about kinship care too?
Sure. That's another one of the models. It's kind of a foster care model, but it's different because the families, the provider families, are actually are family members, so they're related. The client is related to the people that are caring for them. So, for instance, I could take care of my own mother, bring her into my home, and the state of New Hampshire, if they're qualified, would reimburse the provider for taking care of the person as if they were in a facility. So you're kind of responsible for 24/7 care. But it gives the family some extra, you know, it gives the family some reimbursement to allow them to maybe work part-time instead of full-time, and it offsets the cost of having someone in your home. And that's a very cool program. All my kinship homes are happy homes. So
that's good to hear. Kathy, one of the things that I think, first of all, as you talk about your program, you're describing a service for someone that's elderly, but I have a real sense, and I know you do too, that when you are able to make a good fit or provide services to someone, it really impacts not just the person receiving the service, but the entire family. And I don't know if in your personal situation you're beginning to grapple with aging parents, or you feel yourself pulled in different directions because of that. But I know lots of people are the issues that that are facing families. It really sort of affects everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think what we're hearing now is we really don't hear from families when they're just starting to think about it. You know, there's nothing wrong yet, but I'm really thinking ahead. We hear from families who are kind of hit with it very quickly. Someone's fallen, something has happened, there's a crisis, and they start to realize, wow, I haven't thought about this, and we need to get through this crisis, and then we need to make a plan. What we encourage people to do is to be thinking about it, you know, ahead of time. My own family, I have a very spunky mother who still drives. She's heading towards 80, but she's very, very active. She's been widowed for about 20-some years. But, you know, after doing this job for a while and hearing people call in a panic, I think about it now. And we've had the conversations. I think people need to, you know, sit down and talk to their independent elders while they're independent and can still decide what it is they'd like to do when they get older. And to talk about the real things. You are eventually not going to be able to drive. You are eventually not going to be able to run to the store for a gallon of milk. These are things that shouldn't mean the difference between being able to live at home and being in a facility. When I talk to you about nursing home care, you know, nursing home care, sometimes people don't fit. There are certain things they can't do at home, and because there are no other options for them, they end up in a very restrictive environment. What we do is we can come in and say, oh, so you can't drive anymore, or you need help with this, this, and this, but you can do all this other stuff by yourself and still remain independent. So we spend a lot of time kind of individualizing care plans and making sure that people still feel like it's their home and still feel like they can do it. So,
Kathy, one of the things that I've always been puzzled about, and I guess it makes sense from a cultural perspective, but it seems like women in your age category seem to get and stuck is not the right word, but put in a position of being responsible sometimes more than men are. Is that something that I've just imagined, or is that true?
No, I think you're probably right, but I do have to tell you that I probably thought a lot like that too. And recently, I've been pleasantly surprised to see families that there are no daughters. So sons that have really stepped up, you know, the male sons in the family are stepping up and taking charge. And sometimes you see that, and then you see families involved, son and daughter-in-law, maybe. Yep. Some of our kinship homes are like that.
That's really good. I mean, reassuring to hear. So you're seeing you're seeing men and women both sort of stepping up to the challenges.
Yeah, I really do. And I can, I'll give you an example. Sometimes, you know, I'm 51 years old. So sometimes people my age, maybe a son who I have a family right now, the mom was a wonderful single mom and raised two boys that they were very, you know, they're thankful and appreciative for what she went through. And now it's her turn and she needs to, you know, she needs care. She needs coordination of care. And sons have stepped up. Neither one of the sons are married. And they've stepped up. They've said it out loud. Mom did this for us. It's our turn to do it for her. So I think we do get sandwiched in there. I know myself, I can see that. As you get to be older, your mom or your dad start to need care and you're still raising your family. That's a difficult situation, and some people, unfortunately, are dealing with that, where their parents are having aging-related disabilities at younger ages. So,
especially, too, as women and are starting their families a little bit later than they used to when I was younger, and they're the sandwich generation talks about people who find themselves both trying to take care of aging parents and take care of their own younger family all at the same time.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. It's a reality. And the other thing that's an issue is people aren't always still located where their family is. And that's a huge issue, especially in New Hampshire. We see a lot of aging parents and their kids don't live around here. And so that's another huge challenge. And, you know, people don't want to move. They've lived here all their lives and they don't want to move. And I'm happy to say that we're able to take care of people kind of long distance. We can coordinate with a family that doesn't live in, you know, in the area and be their liaison. It's kind of neat. We have a lot of options like that. So within, you know, there are a lot of private pay options. People can pretty much have what they want. It's interesting to see the kinds of families that, you know, the way they're spread across the country. We have a client right now that's in a nursing home that we're her visitor. You know, we go in and we check on her and we coordinate and we report back, and it's comforting to the family, and she's not alone. So,
Do you ever find yourself, Kathy, in a position where you sense that the primary decision maker or caregiver, the person in the middle, the daughter, the son, the daughter-in-law, whoever it happens to be, that they're so stressed that they can hardly keep things together?
Always. I wish I didn't have to say that, but always. I think, like I said before, it's never we don't think about this when everything's going fine, and we start to think about it when somebody, you notice mom's maybe a little forgetful, or she's mixing up her medication, or if something bigger happens, you know, somebody falls, or that puts everybody into a spin. You know, you're living your life, you're working your full-time job, and then all of a sudden mom's in the hospital, and you're talking to discharge planners about deciding where she should go from here, and that is, and it hits people quickly. They aren't expecting it, and they find themselves in a situation where they have to make big decisions, and they haven't talked about it. So it's something that, yeah, we, like I said before, you need to. We encourage people to start talking about it when they don't have to, and to be thinking about it. A lot of times, Kathy, the decisions. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
A lot of times, they're making decisions, and they don't understand. You know, someone's gone in the hospital with a fall. You go to a discharge planner, and remember that hospitals are, you know, they're not keeping people as long as they used to. Everybody's got their own agenda about discharge. You know, we need to get you out because, and it's insurance-based, and you know, there are financial reasons why decisions are being made, and families are trying to deal with what's the best thing for mom or dad. And sometimes it's, you can't slow it down, and they're big decisions. So we see that all the time.
Kathy, I know because I get to work with you that you have an incredible amount of enthusiasm for the work that you do. You know, my guess is that you really love the work that you're doing and the impact that you're having on families. But where did that first of all, the interest in working with elderly people, is that something that you've been pursuing your entire career, or is it something that is new to you? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's so funny that you say that because I ask myself that question all the time. I think I stumbled. I really do think I stumbled upon it. I was in college thinking I wanted to, I had to pick a major, so I picked health administration and planning. Didn't quite know what that meant. Thought maybe I'd like to work. Knew I liked medical. Thought maybe nursing home administration or something like that. And I stumbled into a job. I thought, well, this will be good because no matter what I do, it'll give me some experience. And I worked in a nursing home as I went to college. And it took me about 10 minutes to figure out that I love this population. I have a wonderful old Italian family, so I was surrounded by elderly people that I don't know if you are, I don't know what nationality you are, but
I don't know
Italians, Italians, they hang on to their culture. They make sure that everyone lives it and remembers it. And so I grew up in a family like that, that we respected our elders, and we always thought, oh, you know, they're wise and they have so much to offer. And then working in the nursing home was just a kick. I love that. That was one of the most rewarding things I ever did. A lot of work, tiring, but really, really very rewarding. And then I went from there to, you know, I had my kids, and I went from there to trying to find a job that was flexible so I could be home with my kids. And I ended up doing home care for, you know, medical home care. And I went around town, you know, making friends with people and giving baths and shopping and preparing meals. And can I tell you that even to this day, is the most rewarding job I ever had. And I have lifelong friends from that experience. So I think that's where my passion came from. And I don't know if you spend much time with people over the age of 80, but mm-hmm. they're really funny and fun and wise, and I could write a book.
Well, I think maybe you should write a book, Kathy, but when you, and this is probably going to cause you to have to think out loud because, or maybe it's a question you've been asked before, but, and you were touching on it a little bit a minute ago, but what are some of the things that you've learned from elderly people that you've worked with that have sort of caused you to sort of pause and think about how you're living your life, and maybe things that you've learned that have helped you grow in certain directions? Is that too vague a question?
No, it's not. And I have to tell you that what do I learn, and I learn every day because they still make me stop and think. I learn that maybe I live a little too carefree a life. Mm-hmm. They're very, you know, you can learn a lot about how to manage your money, how to, you know, selfless decisions that you make. You watch people that are, you know, 85, 90 years old, and, you know, they start to tell you a story about things like this always make me stop and think. When I was 40, I lost my only child, or they have history that is so far removed from where they are now, but you can watch how it has impacted the person that they are now. I'm in awe because I think of myself, I'm 51, I'm very lucky. My family's healthy, and you know, you look at your life where you are right now. But when you look at someone who's 85, 90 years old, who's looking back at something that you can't even imagine what kind of impact that would have on you, and they're 40 years away from it, and they're looking back, and it's a life lesson. I learn stuff like that every day, and I learn to appreciate what I have, and I also know that you look at an elderly person, and you know nothing until you let them tell you their story, because they have some fascinating things, and they've been through some stuff that, you know, I'll never go through, and mm-hmm. And you wonder, you know, sometimes people say, oh, you know, so-and-so, she's a little crabby, or she's a, you know, you go look at what they're dealing with, and then you hear their story, and you think, oh, man, you know, most of the elderly people I know have really devoted their lives to their families, and I'm encouraged to tell you that a lot of families are returning the favor and doing a great job, so I learn every day.
That's really nice to hear. I think when you're talking about, it seems like much of what you learn is because you stop long enough to listen. And I know a lot of elderly people in my world that there's nobody really listening to them.
Oh, you're right. You're right about that. You're right. And some of the, I'll tell you a story. I have a client that is in a nursing home, and I've been following her for a long time. And now I'm just kind of, I go in just because she's my friend now, and 96 years old. And, if you listen, yes, she has confusion and she has probably Alzheimer's but if you go listen, the stories back from the things that are in her mind now are stories from when she was happy, when she was younger, when her kids were little, when she had babies, I'm telling you that every day, every time I see her, she teaches me either a new poem, a new verse from something, she corrects my grammar, she tells me stories about ham radios, and she's fascinating, and only if you listen. You know, if you dismiss her as confused or whatever, but if you sit and listen to her, I share her stories with her family every chance I get, because I know that they're real stories and they're very vivid, but they happened, you know, 70 years ago. Mm. And I'm fascinated. So that's probably where my passion comes from.
Well, I'm glad that you do have the passion. Did you, and now I'm going to take you way, way, way back to when you were a young person yourself, but your sense of enthusiasm, you're so much fun to be around, you're enthusiastic, you get challenged all the time professionally, and I don't know how it is in your personal life, but you seem to be very resilient, and you seem to have this can-do attitude, like give me a challenge. How did you learn? Did it just happen, or did you have role models? Or
yeah, I think my dad, who's, God bless him, he's been gone for 22 years, but my dad was he was that guy. My dad told me back when, you know, when I was 16, and he said to me, you know what, my job is not to be your friend, it's to teach you how to be a good person. And then when you live the life that, when we have some things in common and you get married and you have your kids, then we can be friends. Mm-hmm. And he was the type of guy that it was never a question of, can I do it? It was, well, how are you going to do it? And there wasn't we always say this, there was no option to, it was not an option to say, I can't handle this, or I don't know what to do. The answer came from you. You had to figure out, what am I going to do? And it might not be the right thing, but yeah, he was a huge role model. And if anybody ever tells me I'm like my dad, I smile from ear to ear, because he was fabulous. And I'm always thankful that he passed away when I was 28 years old and I had two children. And I always say, boy, what a different life I've had, because I had him that extra so many years where we did get to be friends. So, and sense of humor, that's huge. I was married before, and I had I was married to a very chronically ill person, and so life was hard for probably 17 or so years, and I remarried, and now I have a life I couldn't imagine back then, and it's just perseverance, you know, it's just, you do what you have to do, and you do the right thing, and you just, like you say, keep moving one step at a time. Mm-hmm. And don't let them, you know, if you stop, that's when you get in trouble. So you just have to keep moving forward. And I think, yes, I've had my challenges, and someone else might look at my life and think, whoa, how'd you do that? But I always think it's just, you know, it was just all getting you to where you are now. So,
thank you for sharing that, because first of all, 17 years is a long time, to deal with, caregiving for somebody.
Yep.
And I think sometimes people who are optimistic as you are and who have a lightness about them, people assume that they've had easy lives or that,
yeah,
that they haven't had challenges. And, when you listen to people, you begin to discover that that's really not accurate at all. So it's not
no,
that.
You pointed to that before. You said, you know, you got to listen. And the reality is when you have, if you have difficulties, we've all had them, you don't wear them on your sleeve because people don't really want to hear your troubles. Mm-hmm. But it's a compliment to know that, okay, I can look back and say, yeah, this is, it's part of why I am who I am now. I tell my husband now, good thing I didn't meet you 20 years ago because we would have had nothing in common. But now I have a fabulous husband, a fabulous life. My kids are grown. I have beautiful grandchildren. And I really believe that I didn't know that then, but it's all about moving forward and just keep doing the right thing.
From your vantage point, have services for elderly people, are they improving? Are we heading in the right direction? Are people being creative enough? Are you seeing the kinds of changes that make you hopeful?
I'm always hopeful. I do get discouraged because, you know, like anything, you're working within systems. You know, we can't just be creative because we have regulations to follow and we have to work within the system. A lot of what my frustration is based upon people's ability to pay for their services. People are in different financial situations. And we say this all the time. There's a group of people that you have to be very, very low income and you have to meet very strict guidelines to qualify for Medicaid services and non-medical supports you have to be very, very low income. So, and then there's the people that have a lot of money and they have a lot of choices. Small group, again, but it's the middle. It's people, the reality is if you need, you know, 10 hours of care a week to keep you home, it's expensive. And for, you know, I'll give you a round figure, $220 a week for someone on a fixed income, even a very low income that doesn't qualify for services, that's doesn't work. And
right.
So are we always, yes, I'm always hopeful because sometimes we're allowed to be creative and it actually works. A lot of times we have to struggle through the system and that is always challenging, but you said I was challenged by my work. That's my challenge. So,
mm-hmm.
But we continue. And we work very closely with our state to be part of, you know, part of the creative group because sometimes they don't think outside the box because they can't. So that's what we try and do is continue to remind them that we're here if they want to be really creative. Here we are and we're ready. So,
you know, one of the things that I find myself talking about often and writing about often are beginnings and endings and I'm always, as you know, encouraging people to begin with yes. But something that I've been thinking about, in fact, I'm going to be doing a commencement. I was asked to do a commencement speech coming up in a few weeks. And one of the things that occurred to me this morning is that how closely related beginnings and endings really are. And I was thinking, is commencement really the ending of something or the beginning, or is it both? And do they sort of, it's kind of a circular thing. It's not...
Yeah, very much is. You're right.
How I've thought about it in the past is being you have a beginning or you have an ending, and it's led me to be thinking a little bit, particularly today, about transitions and how the transition into our senior years or our elderly years is for some people, they go kicking and screaming, and then other people go so gracefully with a sense of humor and still seem to be having a good time.
I think that, and I think you're right. I think you called it. You called it right. It's not a beginning and an end. It's a transition. And if you think about it as a more fluid process, I think about that and think there's the grace. That's how people do it gracefully, where they don't. You're right. They, and I think it comes from somewhere way before that. You don't just become graceful. And a lot of people are afraid. Mm-hmm. If we all admitted it, we're all scared about getting older. It's frightening. You watch, especially where you're surrounded by young people, because you've got children and grandchildren, and mm-hmm. that's all fun and exciting, but you have to turn around and look, too, and say, I'm heading that way, too.
Right.
So what do we think about? We think, we laugh all the time, and we say, we better make sure our house is accessible, and how are we going to get inside when mm-hmm. when we can't walk up those stairs?
Right.
And so we laugh about it, but we're probably working through that transition ourselves.
Do you think that there are, and you talked a little bit about it, Kathy, that people, the graceful people who approach their own aging in a more graceful way, they probably have skills that they've had for a long time. They didn't develop them for this transition. Are there things that you can do or that occur to you that can make this transition easier for people that might not already have those skills? Things that maybe could be applied for all kinds of transitions, including the people that are graduating from college that I'll be talking to in a few weeks.
Yeah, and I think I think we did touch on it. I think part of the problem is people aren't used to talking about it. It's scary. So the fact that, and it's scary for anybody in transition, to be able to talk about first I'm really afraid of, or what will happen to me if, and then mm-hmm. Get it out there and say it, and then back up from there and figure out, okay, so let's talk about the worst thing that could happen, and then let's talk about, deal with that, and none of us are planning for that, but let's mm-hmm. think about how do we do it in a positive fashion, how do we move ourselves through and still maintain some, maintain our dignity and our independence. That's what we all want. We're all, and I don't know about you, but I now am more concerned about how am I going to affect my family.
Right.
If, you start thinking about the choices you make and how you take care mm-hmm. of yourself, and it changes, it changes the way you think about it. So I think probably my biggest lesson is if you start thinking about it and don't just be thinking about yourself, you'd be thinking about it in a family sense. It starts to come together, and people can talk about it, and it makes it. My mother says it all the time. I'm not living with you. I'm not going to be a burden. I tell her, Ma, I have all the skills. Look at me. I could do everything. And she's like, oh, no, you're not doing that. But at least we're talking about it.
And I think that is the important thing, because sometimes I think we're afraid of being afraid. Because
yes.
we don't get to talk about it. We don't get to get it outside
right.
and let people listen to it and hear what it even sounds like. So we spend a lot of time being afraid of being afraid, and then we don't get to the place where we can talk about what's bothering us. Because once you start talking about it, then you begin to shift into, well, what can I do? What can I do about
exactly.
it?
Exactly, and that's where you have to go. And the reality for all of us is, listen, we probably feel things, and I know probably my mom does too. You feel something's aching or something's scaring you, or you felt dizzy for a minute, and instead of saying it out loud, you make it, oh, I'm going to pretend that didn't happen. And then, these things accumulate, and then people get into trouble. They have health issues that they're, because they haven't thought it through, because they haven't had the discussion, they start hiding. And they hide their disabilities. It's not a disability, but I mean an age-related change.
Sure.
They hide that stuff because if I show you, you might, something about older people, they are always, everybody I run into, I shouldn't say everybody, but most of the people I run into are afraid that you're trying to take them out of their house.
Right.
And there are people, and there are, you read about it, and we all read about it, there are families, and there are people that are concerned about who's going to get the house, and what's going to happen to the property, and there are people that have those concerns that are, they're nervous that people are going to want to take what they have, and so we have to always say, we're here to help you stay here. We're not here to, if you're not at home, we're out of business. So we want you home. So we have to reassure them.
Kathy, with all the, and we just got 1 minute to go, so with
okay.
all the work things that you've been talking about, do you have a balance in your life as well?
I think I do. It's thanks to this wonderful place I work, but I do. And I think that you have to. I value my other time as much as there were times in my life where work was everything to me, and it was a distraction. But now work is, you're right, it's the other side of the, you know, it's the other side of the teeter-totter, and I have a nice balance, and I have good things.
Awesome. Well, it's been wonderful. You work right down the hall, but it's been wonderful chatting with you on the radio today. And I'm going to come down and look for you and tell you you did a great job. So
thanks,
thank you,
Paul.
Kathy.
It was
and,
fun.
All right. We'll talk again in just a few minutes. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Empower Radio. And thank you, Nate, for making this happen so smoothly today. Have a great day, everyone.